Hello, and welcome everyone to Outbeat Now. We're one of the four monthly shows on Outbeat Radio, for and about the LGBT community here in the North Bay that you'll hear only on KRCB Radio. I'm Greg Moralia. Jeff Basham is off tonight. But we've got a great show for you, starting with a celebration of this week's final end to the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. And joining us from San Diego are several active duty members of the military who will share with us what it means to serve openly now in their respective branches. And then on the Outbeat Youth segment, local singer-songwriter and rising star Bobby Joe Valentine will be with us to share for the first time here on the radio his coming out story. So let's get started. Here's your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, September 25th, 2011. The end of the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy brought liberation for many gay and lesbian soldiers who finally feel comfortable enough to come out to colleagues and their country. Their choice to be open on the job, however, is not the only time-sensitive decision, as thousands of service members discharged under two decades of the discriminatory policy consider whether and why to reenlist. Danny Hernandez, a former Lance Corporal in the United States Marine Corps, discharged in 2010, said, "Now's the time to make that decision, especially for those who've been kicked out. I think everybody will be different about how they feel, but it's time to show that there are hundreds of thousands of people who have served our country who want justice, whether that's a line changed on paperwork or wearing a uniform again." Despite career delays, jolted personal lives, and in some cases life-threatening despair over their discharge, former members of the military in interviews expressed an eagerness to reenlist that superseded any bitterness or hardships. They said the pull of service, the uniqueness of the work and lifestyle, and the desire to help the armed forces transition into an era without Don't Ask, Don't Tell motivated their decision to join the estimated 66,000 gay and lesbian people currently serving in the military, out or not. And in Tulsa, Oklahoma, of all places, the United States Marine Corps began recruiting for gay and lesbian soldiers on the first day they could. The New York Times reports that the Marines, led by Master Sergeant Anthony Henry, traveled to the Dennis R. Neal Equality Center in downtown Tulsa to find some good men and women. Not many potential recruits actually showed up, but those who did expressed gratitude to the new inclusive military. Sergeant Henry worked to comfort one potential female recruit. He said, "It's your business, and you don't have to share it," he told the young woman. "But you're also free to be at the mall with your girlfriend." And also on Tuesday, Archbishop Timothy Dolan, president of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, sent a letter to President Barack Obama this week to criticize recent actions of the administration on behalf of LGBT equality, especially the decision to stop defending the Defense of Marriage Act. In his letter sent on Tuesday, he expressed, quote, "grave concerns about the steps that, in his opinion, escalate the threat to marriage and imperil the religious freedom of those who promote and defend marriage." He focused on the decision of the Justice Department to stop defending the Defense of Marriage Act earlier this year, a move the bishops opposed. Dolan said, "Unfortunately, the only response to date has been the intensification of efforts to undermine DOMA and the institution of marriage." And here in the North Bay, the Napa Grilla Bar, a social group that hosts LGBT events in Napa County bars and restaurants, and the Napa Valley Unity League will act as an event host and sponsor of the 20th annual Napa Valley AIDS Walk, coming up on Saturday, October 29th at 10 a.m. The walk will have a Halloween theme, and participants are encouraged to wear costumes. The starting line is in the Napa Veterans Park in downtown Napa. Every year, diverse teams participate from the business, school, and faith community, as well as families and individuals for awareness and fun. The day's activities will include refreshments, raffles, team competitions, DJ spins, and a live broadcast on KVON radio. The beneficiary of this year's walk is the AIDS Education and Outreach Programs of Planned Parenthood Shasta Pacific, which provides comprehensive HIV prevention education to Napa County's highest-risk populations. PPSP educators are trained to facilitate groups around harm reduction and to empower its clients to make healthy, positive choices about their bodies. The primary goal of the groups is HIV prevention attained through discussions about healthy relationships, sexually transmitted infections, anatomy, communication, and values. PPSP provides education at a wide variety of organizations, including the Napa County Outpatient Adult Recovery Program, the Napa County Behavioral Interventions, Juvenile Hall, and the Farm Workers Camps. PPSP educators provide a connection to health services for people who may have some barriers accessing them, and they are one of the primary resources in Napa County for HIV information and prevention services. The Napa Gorilla Bar and the Napa Valley Unity League have planned three events this month that will benefit the Napa Valley AIDS Walk. The first will take place on Saturday, October 8th, when Big Gay Bingo happens at the Alexis Baking Company, 1517 3rd Street in Napa, from 7 until 11:30 p.m. And then on Wednesday, October 12th, We Are Here will screen at the Cameo Cinema in St. Helena at 7:30 p.m. The new documentary takes a deep and reflective look at the arrival and impact of AIDS in San Francisco. For more information about these events, check out the Napa Gorilla Bar website at napagaybar.blogspot.com. If you have news or event you'd like to share with our listeners, you can tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat Radio News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia.
The military has ushered in major change, officially bringing an end to the ban on gays in the military. The end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is a historic milestone. And 10 News reporter Michael Chand has some new details on a former Marine with a unique journey that crossed paths with two presidents.
We're at a military recruiting office in Hillcrest, where beginning today, openly gay recruits were allowed to sign up and enlist.
From recruits to a former Marine.
I definitely feel the weight of the day.
A feeling of something historic.
Oh, I feel very blessed.
For 12 years, Eric Alva served in the Marines. He told some colleagues about his sexuality, but the secret never got out.
It has a microprocessor.
In 2003, Alva lost his leg to a landmine during the first days of the invasion of Iraq. The Marine received a Purple Heart and a visit from a president and was medically retired. Years later, he would meet another president.
It's still so surreal. I still get goosebumps thinking about it.
As President Obama signed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, now in effect.
This day actually marks a stepping stone for the United States of America on letting people be who they are.
An opinion shared by Joshua Robinson, a National Guard reservist.
Today's one of the first times that I've woken up with a smile on my face in I don't know how long.
Robinson was deployed three times as a Marine and once as a Guardsman. He came out publicly a few months ago.
They're all positive reactions.
For William Rodriguez Kennedy, the positive comes with a negative. Discharge under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the former Marine says he faces long odds for reenlistment because of the drawdown. He's hoping a pending court case could require those kicked out to get their jobs back.
I think the policy was wrong, and I think that it should be easier for people to be restored to what they were.
I think it's like when women and African Americans were first integrated into the military, it's going to be a long, bumpy road before it eventually smooths out.
And with us now are the two gentlemen you just heard in this interview, Josh Robinson, who's a former Marine and now an active duty member of the National Guard, and William Rodriguez Kennedy, who was discharged from the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They're there with several other friends who are also LGBT members of the military, joining us live from a barbecue at Josh's apartment in San Diego. Gentlemen, welcome to Outbeat Radio.
Hey, hello.
Okay, let's see if we can get you to speak up just a little bit there. Well, Josh, I would like to start with you. I mean, this has been a pretty big week. You were on ABC a couple of times, but let's go back to where you came from. Tell us about where you grew up a little bit, and had you come out before joining the military?
I grew up in Antelope Valley. It's about an hour and a half, slightly northeast of L.A. And I did not come out before I joined the military. I didn't come out to myself until after I had joined the military, much less come out to anybody else.
I see. So what inspired you to join the military?
It was something that I had always wanted to do forever, and I didn't realize, like I said, until after I joined the military that I was gay. I had always had feelings for guys, I guess, from about when I was 12 or 13, and I just always thought it was a phase that I was going through.
So why did you choose the Marine Corps?
Because it was the hardest branch. It was going to give me the most challenge.
Okay. And so when you were what year did you go into the service?
2002.
Okay. And at what time during your military service did you discover that you were gay?
Shortly, about 8 months after I had joined the Marine Corps and had gotten to my duty station and met friends down here in San Diego.
Okay. And what happened when you had that realization, and what were you thinking about in terms of your career and Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
I was worried about about it, but it was more so on the back of my mind. My work life and my personal life have always been two completely different things.
Okay. Did you ever have any close calls?
I did, in Okinawa, Japan.
Okay. What happened there?
Roommate caught me kissing another guy. Rumors spread around my unit, and that lasted for about 2 weeks. Nothing ever happened because there was no hard evidence.
Okay. Did I have a complaint been made to your superiors at all?
No, it was just rumors floating around my unit.
Okay. Well, tell me about boot camp. I mean, that had to have been a little bit of a challenge. You said you had some feelings when you were a teenager. What was boot camp like for you?
Honestly, it was no challenge. Sex was the last thing on my mind for the 5.5 months that I was in boot camp because I was injured. But sex was honestly the last thing on my mind. I can only recall out of the 5.5 months that I was there that I only masturbated once.
And I've heard that from other folks in the military. I mean, boot camp is such an intense experience. You really don't have much time to think about anything else. Well, tell us about some of the assignments you've had in the Marine Corps or in the Guard that you're most proud of.
I've done 4 deployments. My first 3 were with the Marine Corps. My first was for the invasion of Iraq. We sat in Kuwait for 6 weeks waiting for the war to start, did our job over there, and floated back over back here to San Diego. My second deployment was over to Okinawa, Japan. Got to do some non-lethal training and a lot of other fun training with the Thai Marines and the ROC Marines, which are the Korean Marines. My third deployment was back over to Iraq. We were floating back to Iraq versus flying back, and we got stopped to help with the tsunami. Stopped in Sri Lanka and Indonesia. And then my last deployment was with the National Guard, back over to Iraq.
Wow. And you're doing that now?
Yes, but I'm getting out real soon.
Okay. Well, tell us about the culture. I mean, I know we all read about the don't ask, don't tell policy as being sort of the official position of the military. But, you know, from someone who was actually there and living it and watching it unfold, what was reality? I mean, I've heard a lot of stories about at the line level, no one really cares. What did you observe?
The hardest time for me while being in the military under don't ask, don't tell was definitely when I was deployed. I could call my friends or email them, but it was completely different than being able to sit face-to-face with my friends and talk to them. That was by far the hardest time, and I think Matt and Will, who you're going to talk to tonight, would agree with that. It was being deployed.
Sure.
Really, when don't ask, don't tell really begins to affect you.
Well, yeah, I know it's tough under normal circumstances, you know, being away from family and friends. I can only imagine what it's like to have to hide even those few friends you might be able to contact with.
Yeah, because back here in the rear, it's, you know, you had to play the straight game for, say 8-9 hours a day, and then you could go home and be yourself.
Right.
Over there, it was my last deployment was 18 months. So it was 18 months that I was not able to be myself at all.
It's a long time.
I just had to live a constant lie for that 18 months, basically.
Right, right. Well, tell us about this organization, Protect and Defend, that you have been part of.
I'm a founding member of an organization called Protect and Defend. It's for gay cops, firemen, military, federal and state law enforcement, other public servants. They're, for support, we have a psychologist that's in the organization, and we'll talk to anybody in the organization about anything that's on their mind, anything they need to talk about. Really there for networking and social. Reach out to other people and talk about your experience, make new friends.
So how important was being part of this organization to you while you had to be so hidden in the military?
Really, really important. Reached out to a lot of the members of the organization for help.
I see.
For emotional and psychological support and help.
Now, what's the composition of Protect and Defend? You mentioned that it supports law enforcement as well. What percentage would you say were active duty military?
I don't have the numbers on hand. I would say a good 30 to maybe 40% of the organization is military between active duty and reserve.
So it sounds like a pretty important organization for them.
Correct.
Yeah. So is Will there with you?
Yes, he is.
Well, let's talk with him for a little bit.
All right, I'm on.
Will, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Excellent. What's Josh making for you there in the barbecue?
We had burgers, hot dogs, corn, all sorts of things.
Outstanding. Very, very good. Well, let's start with your story then. What inspired you to get into the military?
I think I knew really young. I was involved heavily in high school with ROTC, and it was actually Air Force ROTC, but I knew I didn't want to do that. And I had actually always wanted to join the military since I was young.
I see. So tell us what your military history has been.
So I joined at 17 in 2004. In fact, I did my first oath of enlistment on September 11th, 2004. I was one of the younger Marines in the Marine Corps. I was definitely one of the youngest NCOs in the Marine Corps when I was promoted to 18.
Okay. Now, unlike Josh, did you know at that point you were gay?
Oh yeah, I had known long before I had joined the military. I think I learned, or at least I accepted it when I was younger. I had a very supportive mother, so I didn't have trouble like growing up with that.
I see. So as you thought about, getting involved with the Marine Corps, obviously Don't Ask, Don't Tell was in place at that time. What were your thoughts about being able to manage that?
At 17, I didn't have the political acumen that I have now, so I really didn't take into account the policy that much until I got to MEPS and they actually stated it. Even then, I thought that, people can live professional and personal lives and separate it. So I thought that I could do that. And it really didn't affect me too much for most of my career.
And did you worry about being found out at any point? Did you have any close calls?
I didn't really. I did have a close call. I didn't really worry about it until shortly after I got to the fleet. I got promoted quickly, pretty fast. So that sort of made me a target for other Marines to they sort of want to knock me down a peg. You know what I mean?
Right.
They never knew when I was going to pick up, and I picked up really fast. So they wanted to try and knock me down a peg. And I remember back when MySpace was cool, that one of the Marines actually trolled my MySpace and noticed that a lot of my friends were gay, and that started rumors. And then I put squash to that, but that was the first close call I had.
Now, from listening to the report, I understand you were discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. How did that all transpire?
So I was deployed to Iraq. In Ramadi, we were on a detainee operations mission, I was part of an artillery unit that had never had female Marines in it. I think we were one of the first to actually have female Marines attached to us, in non-combat roles, obviously. But I had a female Marine who was in my squad, and she just didn't like me because I didn't take it easy on her. I didn't tiptoe around her, and she created a rumor just to pick me off, and that started the investigation. And eventually, through the investigation, they knew all my friends and were able to find someone who cracked. And shortly after our deployment was over, they began the proceedings.
So was this friend that ended up giving up the information on you, was that another military member?
Yeah, all the people involved were Marines.
Okay. So you were out to some of them, and at least at some point had received some acceptance unofficially?
Nobody cared. I mean, if you were to look at the statements that they made, even after they threatened them into confession, their statements were like, I remember the one who did crack, he's like, I don't care what he is. I mean, I'd heard that he was, but he's always served as a good Marine. So nobody really cared until afterwards, after they started the investigation process. They put me on a legal hold, which had sort of a negative connotation to it. So that's what actually caused some of the discriminatory acts to happen.
So things like what?
I remember one time I got challenged in front of a formation. I had taken control of the formation. I was one of the most senior corporals at the time because I'd been a corporal for about 2 years, and I was really close to picking up sergeant. So I was in charge of the formation, and usually the most senior person will then take over as the next senior person leaves. So I was in charge, and one of the really boot corporals decided to come at me and say, he basically said that I'm not going to let this fag run the formation. So me being a senior corporal, I pulled rank and I pulled seniority, and then like the other Marines who were the corporals who were there stood up for me.
That's great.
And eventually it was definitely dealt with.
Awesome. Now you talked in the TV interview about your hopes of reenlisting. I mean, after all of that, that had to have been a really tough and painful time. You know, tell us about reenlisting and what some of the challenges you think you've got to face.
Well, it's been almost 3 years now, but I did think about reenlisting, particularly because I'm involved with an organization that had the Log Cabin Republicans. I was the president of the local chapter, and our lawsuit had ruled it unconstitutional last year in October.
That's right.
So I had been one of the three members who like went back and tried to reenlist, other being Dan Choi, Joe Rocha. So at the time, I did want to reenlist. Now, with the policy repealed, there is no easy way for people who are discharged to return to service. So, for example, if I were to want to return as an enlisted member of the military, I'd probably lose my stripes, and I'd have to go through boot camp again.
So you basically
that's not
have
to really an appealing prospect right now, especially since I'm so involved in the political scene and in community activism and stuff like that.
So you'd basically have to start all over again.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. But there is a lawsuit on the book right now that may require a class action. That may be a class action to where, the Log Cabin court case is still out there. So if that case continues and they rule it unconstitutional, then I was then wrongfully terminated, and then I can try and sue to be either reinstated or to receive I already have my benefits, but to receive compensation for the termination.
Right, and I imagine that there's a lot of men and women in your same shoes.
Thousands. I mean, although not all of them were discharged because they were gay. Some of them, most of the 14,000 are probably in my shoes. But the issue is that whether or not they're young enough to serve again, which is why you don't have many people who come out and say it and try it.
Right, right. A lot of people's lives impacted by this for sure. Can we talk to Matt for a bit?
Yes, here he is.
Matt was an active duty Navy, from what I understand. Are you with us there, Matt?
Yes.
Excellent.
Here.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, tell us about your experience in the military. When did you join the Navy?
I joined the Navy September 24, 2006. My 6-year mark was yesterday. So I've been in for 6 years. Right now I'm a gunner's mate second class, and I've been on 2 deployments. Right now I'm on a shore command, so I can honestly say that I've done my share of sea time. So, you know, that's basically it right there. And that's my career in a nutshell.
Uh-huh. And at what point did you discover that you were gay? Was it before or after you got into the military?
Way before. Way before.
It's just interesting to me. I mean, it had to take a lot of guts, you know, to know that there was a policy that could get you discharged if someone found out. What were your thoughts when you entered in?
My thoughts were just, you know, I really didn't, you know, think of the don't ask, don't tell as, you know, an issue that would prevent me from doing what I always wanted to do. I always understood that, you know, as long as a job is done, no one would really care.
Right, right. So tell us about some of the assignments you've had. I mean, the Navy's a little bit different than the Marine Corps. What are some of the things you've done that you've been most proud of?
First, doing, you know, a full 4-year contract in the Navy as Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was, you know, implemented.
Right.
So I guess that's one of my proudest moments, because of the fact that, you know, I did my job and I did it well, and no one really cared. I'm still rocking on with 2 more years.
Great. So did your colleagues at the line level know?
Some did, some didn't. You know, some of them I came out to them, and I was part of the military march in San Diego Pride, and as soon as, you know, my photo, you know, flourished, you know, on the internet, and it was kind of like, oh, I guess, well, everyone knows now, but, and practically everyone did know.
Now, that had to have been a pretty big move for all of you. I mean, this was back in July. The repeal had been fully implemented. There was a time when, the court said that we're going to lift the stay on the decision or whatever it was so that you could come out and then you couldn't. But you guys decided you were going to march anyway in the San Diego Pride Parade. What was that like?
It was exciting and nerve-wracking at the same time, because we didn't know exactly what was going to happen the next work day. And but I think the most exciting part of that march was just everyone cheering us on, and that was probably a very, very happy moment for me.
I bet. And so what happened the next day when you all went back to work?
Well, that's exactly what happened. We went back to work.
And nobody said anything, even though Don't Ask, Don't Tell was still in effect. All the supervisors pretty much just said,
well,
okay.
One of the master chiefs that I worked for, saw my picture in the paper, and it spread like wildfire, and so I got texts on my phone saying, oh, we saw your picture, this and that and the other, and so a couple of people were just like, I really don't care, all that matters is be who you are, don't try to fake it, and do your job.
Right. Well, we read a lot about this training that everyone was to receive on how to work with gay and lesbian colleagues in the military. What was that training like?
It wasn't necessarily training on how to work with gays and lesbians. It was basically training on, Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is going away. So, you have to deal with the new regulations here. You can't use, the necessary words that the military has used for the past 200 years. You kind of have to have a little bit of guidelines now. I know that it's not going to be a hard change because of the fact that gay people have been in the military for the longest time.
This is Josh, if I can say something. Part of the training was, you're going to treat them just like you always have. And a lot of people bring up the concerns, well, what about if I'm sharing a room with another gay person? Well, the same thing that I told some of the people that I worked with. Guess what? You've already been sharing a room with gay people. You didn't know it. Now you know it.
Yeah. And
they didn't try anything with you before. They're not going to try anything with you now.
And gay people have been in the military, for the longest time, since it was created.
Right.
So, all that changed is that, gay people could be who they are without hiding. And to me, honestly, that's not a big change.
Right.
Because I've been doing my job perfectly well.
Sure.
And these two Marines here have been doing their job perfectly well also.
Well, I think what we see in the media anyway is a lot of speaking from politicians, a lot of opinions of politicians that aren't even affiliated with the military, and a lot of command folks. You really don't hear at the line level how big of a deal this is or isn't. What have you guys seen as the change? I mean, has anything really changed at the line?
I'm sorry, say again.
Now that the repeal is in place, it's over with, it's done, the training's done. Has the culture changed at all in the military?
It is a little too soon to tell, but I predict that not much is really going to change because we all have an equal part in the defense of this country, and as long as people are doing their job as a unity, as one, and we're accomplishing the goal of defending this country as the biggest superpower as we are, then no one is really going to care if you're gay or straight because you're doing your job, and you're doing your job well.
Right.
I mean, as military members, we are professionals. And if we hold ourselves to that professional manner, no one is really going to care.
I'll throw this one out there. I'm sure you guys have seen a video of the
Republican debate the other night when the gay soldier asked a question and the crowd booed because of the gay soldier. I don't agree with them booing, but it's because of that gay soldier and everybody else out there that they have the right to boo.
Exactly.
Because of that gay soldier that's on the line that you have the right to say what you want to.
Exactly. Well, gentlemen, I think we could probably spend hours talking about this. I'm really so pleased for you. Congratulations to you all for finally being able to be who you are and to serve our country 100% of who you are. It's really great. We've been talking with Josh Robinson, William Rodriguez, and Matt Avila all the way from San Diego. Gentlemen, we'll let you get back to your barbecue. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Hey,
Greg. Thank you very much.
Hey, Greg, this is Josh.
Yes, sir.
If anybody wants to get a hold of myself or Matt or Will after this, feel free to give my email address out.
We will definitely do that. And give us the website for Protect and Defend.
It's protectanddefend.org.
Very good. We'll try and post that on the Outbeat Radio website as well. Gentlemen, thanks again. And for the rest of you, stay with us. We're going to take a music break, and we'll be right back with the Outbeat Youth segment.
Are birds of a feather, so why don't we flock together and sing the same song a while? Let's be a fiddlestick and fiddle, even though we screech a little. It'll be worth it all to see you smile. And I wouldn't trade $1 million for the moments we share, because the lives are getting smaller by the tick tick tock of the clock as our hairs grow gray right before we fade away. Say you'll stay until the angels call, until we lose all, until our hearts beat small, until the last leaf falls, until the last leaf falls. You are one pretty person and the situation worsens every time you catch my eye. You are a sunset in motion, bringing ripples of emotion that I can't quite keep inside. And I wouldn't trade $1 million for the moments we share, because our lives are getting smaller by the tick-a-tick-a-tock of the clock as our hairs grow gray right before we fade away. Say you'll stay until the angels call, until we lose it all, until our hearts beat small, until the last leaf falls, until it falls. Father, time and the reaper have appointments to keep, and we will never know quite when. So let's use up every moment with the reverential tone that says we don't know how it'll end. And I wouldn't trade $1 million for the moments we share, because our lives are getting smaller by the tick-tick-tock of the clock as our hairs grow gray right before we fade away. Say you'll stay until the angels call, until we lose it all, until our hearts beat small, until the last leaf falls, until it falls, until it falls, until it falls.
That was local musician Bobby Joe Valentine with his original hit, Until the Last Leaf Falls. You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment. And welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a program for and about LGBT youth here in the North Bay and beyond. And you'll find us here on the fourth Sunday of every month as part of Outbeat Now. Before we talk with our first guest, I wanted to remind everyone that the annual Queer Coming Dance, sponsored by Positive Images, is coming up in a couple of weeks on Saturday, October 8th. And as usual, this will be a costume event. This year's theme is Harry Potter. And you can find out more information and get tickets right now at the Positive Images website at www.positiveimages.org. And we've got a really special guest with us tonight. He's a local guy from right here in Rohnert Park, singer-songwriter Bobby Joe Valentine. Bobby, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. And I have to say, ever since you contacted us on the Outbeat Youth website, I've been seeing your name everywhere. It sounds like your musical career is really taking off.
Yeah, it's been a really exciting journey, especially the past 2 months have been crazy.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to talk a lot about your music, but let's start with talking a little bit about you. Tell us where you grew up and how that all went.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in Rohnert Park, California. So not too far from your base, actually. And just kind of grew up in a really conservative Christian home. And so obviously didn't come out for a really long time. And just went to a private school out there. And really, I had some wonderful parents. They're very loving. And just kind of hung out in that area, right in Sonoma County.
So you're 25 years old now. And I understand you came out just a couple of years ago. Tell us about that.
I had grown up in this really conservative world where it was being gay was just not really a part of it and not really, definitely not allowed. And so when I realized I was gay, I hid it for a really long time because in my culture, it was like, you know, being gay, liking another guy was almost more like a temptation. You know what I mean? It wasn't something that was a part of your identity. It was just something that like, oh, this is something you have to kick. You know, something you have to get over. And so I just hit it for a while, and I ended up going to a private college just as part of that culture. And I graduated from that college with a pastoral theology degree, so I can marry people if I want to now.
Wow.
Yeah. And I actually went off, and I was a music director at a church in Pennsylvania for 2 years. And it was just after that time, some different kind of events took place, and I just kind of came into my own a little more, and that was around, 22 years old, so just 3 years ago, and I just made a decision I was going to be more honest with myself about who I was, and I just, coming out to me wasn't an epic event, meaning I didn't post it on my Facebook page or, like, message everyone I knew or anything like that. I just decided to live, you know, my life the way that I was born to live it. And it just kind of, so things progress naturally. You know what I mean?
Sure.
People found out in a much more organic way. It wasn't like big and dramatic and weird. And it was actually the best for the culture that I grew up in because, the reaction would not have, and still isn't, you know, support
sure.
of that choice. It's very much, you know, oh, well, you know, we can fix that, or there are schools for that, or, you know, it's very much a, like, this is a problem that needs to be fixed instead of this is a part of you that we need to accept. So I just treat it like, honestly, I just treat it like it's a different culture, like I would, almost like I was flying into Africa and dealing with, like, a complete different culture of people, and I try to be just really understanding with those people and just continue to live, you know, my life, and being gay as honestly as I can, but try to be understanding of them and not like mean or vindictive or hateful to any of those people. Cause a lot of them don't know any better. They grew up, they should, but they grew up in that culture where, you know, it's just like, that's just the thing, you know, being, they don't know anyone who's gay. They don't have any friends who are gay. And so it's like, it's almost a scary thing for them to find out that one of the friends that they've known all their life is gay. So I try to be very gracious about it.
I'm sure it's a real education for them too, in a really positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really been nice for some of them to continue a friendship with me and realize that I'm still me.
Right.
You know, like they're like a lot of their ideas was that like, oh, when you turn gay, all of a sudden you're not a good person anymore. That was like almost the implication. And then to get to know me and realize, oh, he's still the same normal, nice person that we knew before. I think that was really eye-opening for them and really, sure. really healthy for them.
And to discover that you've always been gay. It wasn't, you know, a bolt of lightning that struck you and, you know, turned you that way.
Exactly. I didn't wake up one day and was like, you know what? Exactly. Yeah, it was definitely a something that I've had all my life. So.
So I'm curious, how long? When did you discover that you were gay?
Oh, probably about 16 or 17 years old is when I realized I liked guys. You know, I'd never had any affinity like for girls whatsoever, but I was just like, the culture once again was so conservative and so kind of an interesting culture that, you know, that didn't come into play. Like, we didn't have parties where the situation would come up. You know what I mean? Like, where it would be like, wait, I'm not attracted to this. You know, that never took place. Like, right. You know, you weren't even allowed to, like, kiss a girl in the culture that goes. So it was like, it's almost like an easy place for that to be hidden.
So you mentioned the culture. What religion?
Yeah, I grew up in an independent fundamental Baptist church.
Okay.
So it was kind of that culture of we had these about a group of 150 to 200 people that went to the same church, went to this private school. And then the thing was, you know, when you were done with the private school, the encouragement was to, like, go off to another private college. That was a part of the Baptist affiliation. And so, of course, the damage of that is you never really go out and see the world as it is, you know. So it was all very, like, structured and very focused and kind of very, very closed in.
It must have been really tough.
It was, you know, it wasn't tough in the sense of, like, that's all you knew. So you didn't, like, know that there was this great huge world outside that was waiting to be explored, or you, because that's all you knew was this. You hung around with the same people and you had the same friends. And once, you know, every 3 months you'd get together with a bunch of other churches that believed the exact same way. So, yeah, we didn't really, like, know any different, but like, problems did come up.
Sure.
like for me, I'm a singer-songwriter. Like, what I've been given in this life is to write. That's like my talent that I have. And arts is really discouraged in, like, there's no place in the Baptist culture for arts at all. Like, anything written, any song written outside of a hymn is, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, that's nice, but don't play that in public.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that was a struggle that I came up against constantly, because I loved writing short stories, poetry, and things about, you know, kind of the greater truths of life that didn't really have to do with necessarily our religion. And so that was, like, really weird to start writing songs and immediately have those shut down. So I, for a long time, like, probably aged like 15 to like 22, I didn't write anything, like, at all. I didn't write any stories. I didn't write any songs. I didn't write any poetry, just because I was kind of heading out into this where I was starting to establish, like, a career, which, you know, for them was either a pastor or a missionary or a music director.
Sure.
Of a church. And I was starting to establish that career. And so I didn't, I didn't really, like, do anything.
But you said your parents are loving and you have a good relationship with them now?
Yes, I do. I have amazing parents, and they raised me really well and gave me an awesome work ethic and some really cool values that I still hold to this day. And I think that, like, really helped me in the music industry to work hard and to be honest and to be nice to people. And so, yeah, when I came out to them, it was really very tough. They wanted to send me to this place called Reformers Unanimous, and it was a place that, you know, fixed people that were, like, you know, struggling with drugs, struggling with pornography, and struggling with homosexuality.
Because it's all the same thing, right?
All the same thing. Yeah, all the exact same struggle.
Wow.
And so, yeah, exactly. So immediately I had just a logical disconnect with that. I was like, I don't know if that's what I want to do.
Right, right. Well, tell us how you discovered music.
I always enjoyed music, and my mom, like, you know, forced me to do piano when I was 8 years old. So from like 8 to 10, I did it, and then I got bored of it and didn't pick it up again until college. But I always enjoyed it. I always enjoyed the connection to music. And when I got back in college, I picked up an acoustic guitar and started playing it just on and off, nothing too serious. But I remember when I was a teenager, like, we weren't allowed to listen, of course, to anything except Christian music. And so I bought, like, from Walmart, this, like, really bad quality, like FM radio. And it was one with, like, you know, like the earphones and stuff, and, like, you know, just this, like, to go, almost a Walkman thing.
Right.
And so I would, at night when everyone went to bed and I was like 13 and 14 and 15, I would, like, put it underneath my pillow. And, like, for like 2 hours, like, while everyone was sleeping, I would be listening to, like, pop music, because I just loved music. and I love that stuff outside. And of course I wasn't allowed to do it, so it was, like, totally
taboo.
It was taboo. But yeah, so that was my connection to my first connection to pop and mainstream music. And just, you know, the emotions was just like, wow, this is so exciting and fun, and some of these lyrics are powerful. And I, you know, it was the 90s when they still had good lyrics to mainstream songs.
right.
And it was just like, wow, you know, I love this kind of music. And so I think that was really influential when I started, when I kind of came out and started writing my own songs. I think that was a big influence in it. Just those formative years of sitting there late at night with it under my pillow, listening to that music.
So I would assume also, after you discovered that you were gay and sort of trying to reconcile that with everything that you had been taught by the church and by your parents and so forth, how has that influenced the words in your music?
Oh, like, very much so. My first album, A Place to Belong, is all about kind of that struggle of coming to the conclusion that you don't have a place where you thought you did. And kind of that struggle of, like, wow, you know, this whole culture that I thought I was a part of and that I thought people were really supportive of me, all of a sudden I come out with this one truth about myself, and people immediately separate from me. Right. So there was a real struggle right before the writing of this album and most of the songs on this album, where a lot of people, you know, I had a pretty big influence in the culture that I was in. So I had preached in, you know, literally hundreds of churches and influenced a lot of teenagers and kids. And so there's a situation when I came out and started being honest where parents were just like, okay, you can't talk to this guy anymore. And so I experienced like a complete drop of a good influence that I was on a lot of people's lives. And that was like really difficult. And so trying to sort through, like, basically what people say about me, what's true about me, and what I believe about myself, like that, a lot of the album is about that.
Wow.
Trying to figure that out.
Well, we're going to hear a song from that album, the song Fly, which I listened to and I think is absolutely beautiful. Tell us a little bit about this song.
Yeah, so that song is kind of it's a culmination of a lot of things for me, and a lot of people say, wow, it's really focused, but there's a lot of pieces of the story, and one of it is, of course, not really feeling like you belong, and then the implication that people, you know, when I came out, it was very difficult, and people were thought less of me, and so it was kind of the song was basically my spirit saying that, you know, you're greater than the words that people are saying about you, even the decisions that people are making about whether or not they're going to continue a relationship with you. And so what I did is I took all that emotion, all that, like, angst, and but still all that hope, and I put it into the story of a little boy. And I've always had recurring dreams of flying as well. That's something that I've always dreamed of. And so that really came naturally to talk about that in the setting of this little boy. And yeah, the song has really, it's been amazing how many people have connected to it. I don't think I've met one person that's heard the song and it's been like that hasn't really, really connected to it in a deep emotional way. So I'm really, yeah, I'm excited to see kind of where it goes.
Great. Let's take a listen to it now. Here's Bobby Joe Valentine with his original song, Fly.
My room, and it's robin's egg blue, and it's got a few cracks in the ceiling. This is my street where the Minutemen meet, and Dad says that I'll never be leaving. I'm 10 years old, but I know how to smoke, and the drinks help to cure the bad feelings. This is my home, and the sticks and the stones are made up of the darkest of things. But in my dreams, I can fly and I soar, and my feet touch the sky, and it seems I can go anywhere if I try, and the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams I can fly. Here come the tears and I cover my ears, and I swear I can hear my own heart beat. When they stop fighting to turn out the lights, I pretend that I'm already sleeping. After the violence, alone in the silence, just me and the secret I'm keeping. My dad tells me I'm not worth anything, and I've almost admitted defeat. But in my dreams, I can fly and I soar, and my feet touch the sky, and it seems I can go anywhere if I try, and the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams, I can fly. In my dreams I can fly. This is my room and it's robin's egg blue, and it's got a few cracks in the ceiling. This is my home and the sticks and the stones are made up of the darkest of things. After the violence, alone in the silence, just me and the secret I'm keeping. My dad tells me I'm not worth anything, and I've almost admitted it, but in my dreams I can fly and I soar, and my feet touch the sky, and it seems I can go anywhere if I try, and the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams I can fly, and my feet touch the sky, and it seems I can go anywhere if I try, and the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams I can fly. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams I can fly. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams I can fly.
Bobby, that was really beautiful. Very, very beautiful. And I read on your website that you actually won an award for your original songwriting. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there's this West Coast Songwriters Association, and it's an association of hundreds of songwriters all the way from Portland, Oregon to Hollywood. And they have competitions throughout the year. I competed in one of them, and I won Song of the Month there at that competition in San Francisco, actually. And then at the end of the year, every like chapter, you know, like San Francisco, Petaluma, San Rafael, every chapter has a finals where all the Song of the Month winners play against each other to, you know, to see who's going to win. And so I competed with that in San Francisco at the finals, and that song won. And so they, at the very end of, that was at the beginning of August, and then at the end of August, they have a culmination where all the way from Portland to Hollywood, everyone that won those finals comes together. So 11 songwriters from the 11 different chapters, and they compete for the Song of the Year at that association, at this place called Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. And so I went and I competed there, and the song won, Fly won. And so I was able to kind of walk away with Song of the Year, which was super, wow, super exciting.
Congratulations to you for that. What a great, great acknowledgement of everything that that song represents.
Thank you.
Really, really super. So tell us about some of the gigs you've got coming up and where people might be able to go and listen to your music.
Absolutely. So I have two like basic launch pads where people can hear music and see where I'm playing next. And one is my Facebook page, and that's just facebook.com/BobbyJOV. And so Bobby Jovi, and that's just where you can get some free downloads of my music, and you can check out the shows I have coming up next. And I have a show at the Hotel Utah in October coming up, and then I have some house concerts actually around the area, which are great intimate ways to hear me live, and people can see how to RSVP and see how to be a part of those house concerts on my Facebook page and also on my website. And people can get assigned a hard copy of my album if they'd like on the website, and it's BobbyJoValentine.com. So it's BobbyJoValentine.com. They can kind of check me out there and see where I'm playing, and I'll be here just until October 22nd, and then I'm actually heading out for a 50-day tour. I'm going down to Seattle, Washington, and back with a songwriter friend of mine, and we're not going to be back till December 17th, so we're going to be gone for a while, but we're really excited about the tour.
Wow, how exciting for you. And if you missed those websites, both Bobby Joe's Facebook page and the regular website where you can order one of his CDs and actually have it signed by him, we'll have both of those links posted on the Outbeat Youth website at outbeatyouth.com. Wow, what an exciting future you've got in front of you. I really feel good things are going to happen for you.
Thank you. Well, I'm excited, and we're just, I kind of take everything one day at a time, and some opportunities have come up, which are pretty cool. There's a, do you know Jeff Bridges? He's a movie star.
Yes.
He just started doing some country music.
Oh, wow.
Video promoter for his new tour heard me singing, and we developed a relationship, and he asked me to write a song for Jeff Bridges. So I did, and it got approved. So it's going to be on the video for Jeff Bridges' national tour. And then if Jeff likes it, I might actually go on tour with Jeff on a future tour, which could be a really cool big opportunity, since he plays like stadiums of 50,000.
Really?
And so that could be a really, really fun opportunity. And there's a lot of other cool stuff coming up. We're really excited about it.
Well, very good. And we're really excited for you. Thanks for stopping by tonight to share your very personal story with us and to share some of your music. I know we'll be following you closely and keeping everybody up to date on what's going on with your career.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
And that's it for this edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember, you can follow us all month long on MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter. You can always listen to past shows on iTunes or on our own website at outbeatyouth.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next month. Well, before we say goodnight, I wanted to remind everyone that National Coming Out Day is coming up on October 11th. And if you'd like to share your coming out story with us on one of our shows next month, email us at livingproof@outbeatradio.org. And also next month, we'll have a very special Outbeat Extra, Remembering Matthew Shepard and How He's Changed the World. That show will premiere here on Outbeat Radio on Sunday, October 30th. Jeff and I will be back next month on the fourth Sunday of October, and join us next Sunday night at 8 p.m. for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. Their guests will be sharing some very special coming out stories of their own. Remember, you can always listen to past shows on our website at outbeatradio.com. In the meantime, have a great week. Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCB-FM comes from members and from North Bay Bohemian, published every Wednesday, celebrating the community, the arts, and the music scene in the North Bay. Online at bohemian.com. You're listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. We are your community-powered radio station right here at 91.1 and 90.9 FM. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. New Dimensions is next.